It's such an awesome experience. And then we came back fired up and threw that information out to other homes, those homes.
Awesome.
We have another home that signed up two of their individuals. And I'm not sure if anybody else did, but still, it's just those. And even if we're not getting the time off, we were there attending. Gosh, everybody. I think it was January and the camp is in Maine. I think it was January and these individuals are already talking about it. I can't wait to go to camp. We're like, got 5 months. Just calm down. By the time we get
there. That's awesome, though. Yeah. And now, are those like camps that are free or do those cost? Like, what kind of camps are you looking at for your clients?
Most of the camps cost money. And I would say that a lot of the individuals do have that from their guardians. Their guardians are willing to pay for that because they want them to have that experience. But also a lot of these camps are willing to do, to help out with that. I forget what they call that. But they're willing to help out with a discount or they're willing to pay the full thing. Mm-hmm. And our individuals, theirs is paid for. But if it's not, we would definitely reach out however we can.
Reach out.
And we would honestly help out too if we could.
Because it benefits you as well because you're getting that break.
Yeah.
And then it's fulfilling for them to get to go.
Absolutely. So it works out for everybody.
Welcome to The Hopeful Connection, a resource that connects you to the disability community. I'm Whitley Lemon, your host for today's show.
Well, I guess I could say, go ahead and introduce you, kind of. So today we're sitting down with Kevin, who is a host home provider with Restoring Hope. So I'd love to just hear a little bit about you and what your journey has been like with Restoring Hope so far.
Okay. So my wife and I, Emily, started with Restoring Hope. I think this is our 9th year. We have 3 adopted children, so we did foster care for many years, probably about 7-8 years before then. We let our license expire. We were homeschooling our children, our adopted children. So eventually we got back into it, and Emily had heard about Restoring Hope from somebody else. So we checked into it. We were like, this sounds exciting. It sounds like there was that, Restoring Hope. I can just go on and I will. But this sounded like there's just so much more support than what we were used to. And that was a big draw for us. So we got into Restoring Hope. We got our first placement. I think this is his 9th year, 8th or 9th year with us. And my time frames are always going to be way off. But so we have that individual. And then at that point, we were just doing a lot of relief too. Because I came home. I worked at the juvenile office in Greene County, and I came home to work with individuals full time. So my wife and I were full time caregivers.
Awesome.
So we were just doing relief, and that was just such an awesome experience because we got to meet so many other individuals, and we got to meet other program managers. We got to meet so many other people that worked with Restoring Hope. Mm-hmm. We just did a ton of relief, and then eventually we got second placement, and then eventually got our third placement, and we found our groove, so to speak, with 3 placements. And that's insane because
it does sound like a lot, especially when you have kids already in the home.
Yeah, it really is. But you find your niche, you find your groove, you find out what you can handle, kind of like what is that sweet spot for you, so to speak. Could be 1, it could be 2. For us, it works well with 3.
Yeah.
And then, we have our children in the home too. And just figuring out, you have to have, obviously you have to have a room for each individual too. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to consider too. But it works out well because we have a 2-story home with massive amounts of space and room. So we needed a lot of individuals to fill that up.
So do you find that certain age groups work well together? Is that kind of whenever you were taking new placements, were you trying to keep them kind of around the same age so they are interested in the same activities, or was it not necessarily that case?
No, that's a awesome question. That's a great question because that's something that I think everybody needs to consider is what exactly are you looking for when it comes to your age range. Mm-hmm. We did younger kids because we had younger kids, but that you don't always have to do that.
Right.
So we had younger kids when we first started off, and we were always, I would say we shied away, but we weren't ready for adults. because we wanted the individuals to interact together and play together, mm-hmm. and they did. And yeah. Our adopted children and our individuals, they played together, they interacted together, and that was really important to us. Mm-hmm. And after a certain point, as our children were growing, as time went by, we started looking at adults. Our first placement, Derek, came to us when he was 17, I believe. He graduated high school. And so that kind of flowed with our lifestyle because our children were getting older and eventually graduating high school. And we just got to a point where we were like, let's see what this adult world's all about. Because we didn't have experience with adult individuals except for the adult individual that we had as they were growing out of our home, graduating. And then we had Derek, who was an adult. And right now, all of our individuals are 20 and above. They've been with us since, let's see, Derek's been with us since he was 17. He's 20, he'll be 27 this year. Okay. And then Christian has been with us since he was 18. He will be 21 this year. Then Austin has been with us since he was 24 and he's 27. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, it's a nice niche and we found our groove, I believe.
That's awesome. So with you being with Restoring Hope for so long and obviously doing foster care before, you've been in this, mm-hmm. in the thick of it for years. Mm-hmm. As a caregiver, like what's your daily routine? How do you keep your sanity? What are the things that you do each day that just kind of help you stay grounded?
Daily routine? That goes out the window.
If you even have one, right?
There is no such thing as a daily routine.
What are things you try and get in every day?
Yeah. So the daily routine is Emily and I really try to sit down and see because individuals attend day programs. So they'll have programs that they can go to throughout the day. Two of ours do and one doesn't. So a lot of it is if you have individuals that are in day programs, I don't want to say you're freed up because you're not freed up. You're just able to do more chores and more errands and more. And even if not, if individual doesn't have time alone, you bring them with you, whatever.
Right.
So our day-to-day routine is just kind of the same as you would do with a big family. You're mm-hmm. cooking every morning, you're cleaning, you're doing, you're running your errands, you're doing whatever you need to do. You may have appointments for your individuals, you may have appointments for yourself. Mm-hmm. So it has that tendency to just, like I said, has that tendency to go out the window real quick. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be able to adjust to that because you may need to get something done that's important for you.
Right.
And then something comes up and that's no longer important because you have something else that trumps that.
Something
and you have
precedence.
To be able to adjust. Mm-hmm. My thing is I get up, I'll speak about my routine because this is how I've been for many years, is I'll get up around 5:30 or 6. That is my quiet time. That's a time that I study scripture. I pray. Those are the things that are important to me. So I need quiet time. I get up. I do those things. And then I have a workout routine. And then after that, it just kind of goes into what do I need to accomplish for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I write everything down myself. I mean, people have different ways of planning their days out.
Right.
But for me, I think it's really important to get your quiet time, no matter mm-hmm. what you do with that time. Whatever's
Absolutely.
Important to you mm-hmm. and it's falling off, you need to find out how you can do that. Do it
right.
in the evening, do it during the day, whatever you need to do for your mm-hmm. quiet time. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do with that quiet time, it's totally up to you. I choose to do mine a certain way and choose to do what I want with my quiet time. So I know there's some other questions that you had mentioned in there and I talked about the day-to-day and I may have missed something, so I apologize.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's good takeaways. Finding what works for you, mm-hmm. but having that time
yes.
set aside, whether it's morning, afternoon, whether your clients are out of the home or at a day program, utilizing those windows of time
mm-hmm.
to refill yourself, rejuvenate yourself in whatever way.
Yeah, and exercise and walking and
yeah.
doing the things that are important to you. If those aren't important to you, whatever is important to you. But,
right.
you know, I enjoy the Nature Center here in Springfield. Sorry, we're in Lebanon. But in Springfield, I go to the Nature Center and walk, just getting out in nature, experiences and those types of things, just getting out and getting some fresh air.
Yep.
Because, again, your day can just turn like that and then you're
you
know, in a different mindset.
Right.
So trying to avoid that.
Yeah, Absolutely. Yeah. I think I've heard a lot of science behind like just the groundingness of being outside and getting your feet in the grass or just getting some fresh air or some sunshine too. So I think that's something for people that need a break mentally to check out. If it's just like 15 minutes, just go outside and get some fresh air
and
some sunshine.
Here's the thing too, having your hobbies, you can have an indoor hobby. Like I collect comic books and sports cards, and I also resell. So that's a hobby that I do. It's indoors. It kind of keeps me grounded. It gets me away from everything. Mm-hmm. We also, Derek and I do Taekwondo. And I will throw in a plug, if I may, for American Independent Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. It is a, it's free because it's a ministry. So it's a faith-based. And when you think of like free Taekwondo, I know you think of like YMCA or whatever. And it's just, I am a second degree black belt, so I wouldn't go and attend.
If it wasn't quality.
Exactly.
Right.
I wasn't sure how to say that, but if it's not quality instruction, I'm not going.
Right.
And I'm not going to recommend anybody else going. They're absolutely incredible. It's 2 days a week. I attend Mondays because that works for my schedule. I do 2 hours and I leave just spent. Absolutely spent.
Yeah.
They absolutely challenge me mentally and physically. And I will be 50 in August.
Yay.
And I'm still trying to push myself.
Yeah.
And when they push me, that motivates me even more. And like I said, Derek attends with me. Mm-hmm. So those are things, you know, getting your individuals involved with you through these hobbies too, or any outdoor activities, or they do pickleball on Tuesdays at our church.
Mm-hmm.
Derek and Austin do that. And then I'm trying to think of, like, we go on walks all the time. We just try to do those things. So it's not always just about you getting your quality time or your time alone. It's also getting quality time with the individuals and finding out what drives them and what do they want to do.
Right.
And then, you know, if they're able to do those things independently, I know like Champion Athletes is an organization in Springfield. Fantastic. Susan Miles is amazing. And they do year round. It's not just sports. They do trivia, they do dances, they do all kinds of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, getting your individuals, finding out what they want to do too, so they can do those things because it's important for them to get their time away from you also.
Yeah.
Because believe it or not, we're just as annoying.
I'm sure they need a break from you.
They need a break from us. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I've heard that a lot.
We're mom and dad. You know, and mom and dad are annoying. Mom and dad are trying to tell me what to do and clean my room and do this, and they're not cool.
Yeah.
And my dad's losing his hair and he wears glasses. So, they're embarrassed. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, I love how you really are utilizing your community around you and immersing your clients in that world as well, because I think that helps them, but it also helps our communities be more accepting and adaptable to people with the community of people that we serve. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, like, was that hard for you and Emily to bring your clients into like your family setting, your friend groups, or in your church setting? What was that like for you guys?
Yeah,
was that hard? Were there challenges? Was it easy?
No, it's a challenge. It was a challenge. We had individuals, younger individuals that had a lot of behavioral issues. We had a nonverbal autistic child in our home that couldn't communicate. Mm-hmm. So church was really tough for a couple of individuals. And at one point, we had an individual that bit a pastor in the arm. So we had to, quote unquote, take a break. So, so those are the things that you can't allow to shy you away from community.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's people,
right?
You know, there's aggression. There's things that happen every single day
that
we don't accept and that we kind of turn away from, but you got to keep pushing forward. And that was really important to us when we had to take a break, from church. That was kind of hurtful.
I bet.
So not only is our individual not getting involved with the church, but we're having to remove ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really motivated us to try to change that atmosphere and change mm-hmm. that culture. Mm-hmm. And what can we do about this? So we started looking into our community more about there has to be resources because there has to be people that are dealing with this.
Right.
We're not the only ones.
Right.
So that led us into trying to figure out where these resources are because they're there. Mm-hmm. So we got involved with Enabled. Mm-hmm. You can find them on Facebook.
Yeah.
They are just a fantastic organization. Again, they do a monthly service, so it's not every Sunday, mm-hmm. or it's the fourth Thursday or the third Tuesday. But you can get on their Enabled. You can find them on Facebook. You can find their services. Mm-hmm. They put their calendar there. They do community events throughout the year.
Yeah.
They have individuals come to homes. They have individuals going on hikes. They do walks. They do swim parties. They do all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Enabled is fantastic. Gary and Karen. Do an amazing job, and they do a worship service, like I said, the third Tuesday. So, and from there, we just flooded as many people as possible with that information.
Right.
And then we got connected with another ministry, Unlimited Ministry.
Okay.
It was a ministry that we're going to camp with at the end of May. And Unlimited, I think, is the fourth Tuesday. So, and it's, again, one day out of the month that they do worship service.
Mm-hmm.
So, and guess what? There's an accepting environment there that mm-hmm. has individuals that are loud, that are nervous, that have anxiety, that are rocking, that are just what you would just being themselves
and
experience a service. And I tell you, like, there's Enabled always has at least 30 consistent people that come mm-hmm. and Unlimited.
Wow.
When we first started with Unlimited, it was, I think, maybe 10, 15 individuals. Our mm-hmm. last service that we had, I think there was about 50.
Yeah.
So it's just growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
And we just continuously flood people, even if they don't want the information. I still kind of get them involved with it.
Right.
Because why wouldn't you want these community resources?
Yeah.
So there's, we got involved with that. Due to, you know, and I everything happens for a reason. So, mm-hmm. And that just kind of kept us into, like, what other resources are there? It doesn't have to be just faith-based. What other resources are there? Mm-hmm. And it just led to Taekwondo. I just started AIT in October. I earned my black belt with another school. But so AIT, and that's a free service. And I know that there's so many more, and I may not be thinking of them right now, but there's so many other. And I mentioned Champion Athletes. That's free.
Yeah.
And then like camps. I mean, camps aren't always free, but there's also, I'll probably think of some as we go along.
Yeah. Yeah. But like the week-long camps mm-hmm. give you and your spouse a break.
Yes.
But it gives them something to look forward
to. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of the camps are probably $400 or so, mm-hmm. Roughly around there. And I think for the most part, Guardians have that money set aside.
Right.
And you can hit your guardian up and say, you know, this is what's going on, and this individual should be able to handle this camp. And they have staff that is prepared to deal with behaviors
they're
and whatever. They're equipped for that.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of, you know, everybody knows their individuals and they know what they can and cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
But I would encourage everybody to find those camps because these individuals, you know, they start 2 or 3 months prior to camp, they just start talking about it, start getting excited about it, and they want to buy stuff, and they want to get their snorkeling gear, and they want to get all the stuff that they're swimming, mm-hmm. and, you know, they get super excited about this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you drop them off at camp, and if it works out for you, you have a week of time that you can spend with your spouse,
mm-hmm.
or time that, you know what, maybe you didn't get all your stuff done. Your to-do list is still 3 months behind.
Yeah.
That's a time to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And then your individual, you know, they're well cared for, they're taken care of, they're fed, they're having a blast, et cetera, et cetera. They come back and they're super excited. They usually sleep for 2-3 days.
Yeah.
But then they're super excited about
that stuff.
Just exhausted
from all
the fun. Stuff. Yeah. And they always have nurses there that do their medication. So that's something not you don't ever have to worry about.
Exactly.
So we know of probably 3 or 4 different camps and churches also have camps too,
mm-hmm.
and they may not have staff that is prepared to deal with that. So that's something to really consider.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know your individual, you know your pastors, and you know who's the staff that's going to be there, you can talk to them. We've sent individuals to church camps before. So they just, you know, the resources are out there, and that's something that is really important to get to know other host homes and get to know staff within Restoring Hope, your program manager, getting to know other people, getting phone numbers. I know that's something that with the Restoring Hope conferences that I really advocate for, is getting to know people and getting phone numbers.
Yeah.
Why are we not sharing our journeys together?
Right.
That really just frustrates me. And I know it does happen, but it just doesn't happen often enough.
Yeah.
Maybe it does, and I just don't know about it.
Yeah.
But
I would say people don't realize the benefit of attending the events and the different parties and things. They don't realize that, you know, there's a lot of connection and networking that can happen there organically. And too, you're able to meet clients that potentially you could be doing relief for. If you're wanting to get your feet more wet or just to boost your income, you know, whatever that looks like. So what's been your favorite pieces out of what Restoring Hope has offered over the last 3 years? Because we've been doing the conferences. Well, technically, we've had two conferences, and now we've done two summits. So actually, no, I think three summits.
I think this
three
is the
conferences.
Third.
Yeah, three conferences. I should know this. And then now our second set of summits. So what's your biggest takeaways from that? What do you glean from?
From summits and conferences getting to know other homes and getting to chat with them, because we have different regions within Restoring Hope. So it's not just, I know Springfield and I know but most of the people in Springfield, but I don't know people in like the Kirksville or Northern, or I'm not sure how it's... how it's set up. So getting to know those individuals, and I can tell you, I probably pass out my number like candy.
Yeah.
And I know people sometimes are like, oh, that's cool, right on. And they toss it aside, whatever the case may be. And that's totally fine because hopefully somebody else will pick it up and go, I don't know who this is, but who's, who's handing out their number, and why are they handing out their number?
Yeah.
Because it should, I mean, there's a purpose for me handing out my number. It's to get to know other people, build relationships, and then to let them know. And you had mentioned something earlier, and I wanted to say one of the biggest mistakes that you can do is isolate yourself and think that you are the only one dealing with whatever you're dealing with. Whether that be in Restoring Hope or not in Restoring Hope, but we're focused on Restoring Hope, but don't isolate yourself. And that's why I hand out my number, because I can almost guarantee you, we have been through so much through foster care and through Restoring Hope. We've been doing this, I think, around 13 years. Emily and I have been married. This is our 15th year, and we started foster care right after our honeymoon. Going a little bit more into that later, because I think that's really important too.
I do too.
Now I'm going to get sidetracked, but building relationships and making sure that you're connecting with other people, because they have. And there's things that I haven't experienced that other people have experienced. And I'd love to hear those stories. And how did you get through that? Because I know eventually I'm going to take something out of that and hopefully make myself a better person and a better host home and a better provider overall. Because it's experiences. I mean, that's why we're here, is experiences.
Changing life story too.
Absolutely.
Everyone who's involved, everyone's touched by it in some way.
The conferences, they always offer great speakers. There's always great advice there. There's some icebreaker stuff that, you know, kind of to break the ice and be silly and whatever. So, but I think one of the biggest things is just the connection portion and getting to see people that I haven't seen for a while. Some of the staff that I haven't seen, the people that work for Restoring Hope that I don't get to see. I talk to Jeff every single time I get a chance to. So I see him and I'll chat with him. Man, we just chop it up. So it's nice to see him.
Absolutely. Now I know you you give your number out because you are an ambassador for the Springfield region. And so we utilize you as a resource.
I love it.
Are some of the common questions that you do get, if you don't care to talk about that? Or if there are common ones, I don't know. Are they all like across the most, board, random?
The most common question I get is, why don't I have a client? And that's what did you do to get a client? And it's a lot of it seems like I have telephone conversations and I have text message conversations, and I can almost tell the nature of the text message because it's like, I want a client. Why don't I have a client, et cetera, et cetera. The biggest piece of advice that I can give somebody, regardless of your background, is when you come into Restoring Hope, is exactly what I said just a few minutes ago. Start fellowshipping. Get your name out there. Start talking to people. I told one lady, get a list of all of the host homes and all the relief homes, everybody, because Restoring Hope should have that. And I know that when we were asking for relief, I don't remember who our program manager is, we've been through. I don't mean been through, like the people who are our program managers at one point are now higher up in Restoring Hope.
Yeah.
So they didn't leave. Like I legitimately can't think of anybody who left Restoring Hope. They just got bumped up the ladder because they're so good. They're so amazing.
We're just growing so much.
Exactly. So now I got sidetracked. So I know that when we asked for relief, they sent us a list of, I'm not kidding, 75 to 100 names of homes all throughout the region.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, maybe you have to drive 30 miles to meet up with somebody. Mm-hmm. We did that. We have done that.
Yeah.
But
Which is definitely part of it.
It is.
Yeah.
You
find the right relief person, you may have to drive a little bit.
Yep.
But it's probably worth it to find the right home for your client.
It is.
Because you want them to come home in a good state.
Yep. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So the biggest question I get is, why don't I have a client, or when will I get a client?
Yeah.
And I obviously, I'm not a program manager. I don't. So I don't know when you're going to get that. But if you're just sitting there twiddling your thumbs, I can guarantee you that's why you don't have a client.
Yep.
So the biggest thing you can do is fellowship. Mm-hmm. Start getting your name out there. Go to the Restoring Hope events that they offer. Go to their conferences. They do bowling. I think we have one coming up in May, Andy B's.
Yep.
And then they'll do a swim party.
Mm-hmm.
They do, again, Andy B's or something similar in October.
Yep.
And Christmas time, they do a party. Yep. Attend every single one of those things.
Absolutely.
Even if you don't have a client, you are a Restoring Host home or relief home, whatever you're categorized at. You are an employee, so to speak.
Exactly.
Go into these things. Start fellowshipping. Start talking to people, because it's not only about finding a client and finding relief and finding a financial, finding your financial source.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about meeting people and meeting these individuals.
Yeah.
I have so many individuals that we used to do relief for, and we have three clients again, like I said, so we don't do relief.
Right.
We can't do relief technically.
Right. You don't have a room for those people.
And I think you can only have three clients anyway. So, we don't have extra space.
Right.
I think like we have like seven or eight rooms in our homes, and every single one of them is packed.
Yeah. So,
but we still talk to those individuals, and I hug them and I tell them I love them, because we used to do relief for them for so long, and we established relationships, and they come and they say, and I'm not doing this to be bragging, I'm really not, but they come and say, I wish I can come and live with you guys, and I can do this, so I really miss this, I really miss that.
Yeah.
That's relation.
Yeah.
That's building a relationship. Yeah. So that's why it's so important to continue to go to these events and talk to people. You're not just meeting the host homes. You're meeting the individuals that you could potentially build relationships with.
Yes.
They're fantastic too.
Yeah.
There are so many that every time they see, and I hate that I'm talking about myself, because Emily, anytime anybody sees Emily, they're like, Emily, and they come over and give her hugs. And
love her.
Yeah. So it's, when I say myself, I'm talking about the both of us. I hope I'm representing
your unit,
her.
Yes. Marriage.
I hope we're I hope I'm representing
that.
You
guys are a united front.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, but the biggest thing is, like I said, fellowship, talking, meeting other homes, talking to program managers, talking to Stacy herself, talking to Jeff, talking to Chuck, talking to whoever you need to be talking to. And this isn't just making face, building relationships.
Yeah.
And they will remember, this person isn't just focused on getting a client. They're focused on having a career and providing for individuals that need it provided for, because it's more than a paycheck.
Exactly.
Trust me.
It should be in this line.
This is
absolutely
one of the hardest. I'll put this job against anything. I'll put it against anything because it's 24/7.
Yeah.
You deal with so much, and you have to go through so much also that this is one of the hardest jobs you can ever have.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it for a paycheck, you'll get burned out super quick. Right. So I would, that's another recommendation, is if you're joining Restoring Hope for a paycheck, I would probably look somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because you will get burned out super quick. Trust mm-hmm. me. It's yeah. just not, it's not, it's yeah. not for the faint of heart. It really isn't.
Right.
It's a unique job that requires unique individuals. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved how you hit on how when you go to these events, you see these clients you've done relief mm-hmm. for. So it's like, it's not just a benefit for you to network and like get relief options from other people. Like you're also bringing that support back to that individual, mm-hmm. which makes them a more rounded mm-hmm. person.
Yes.
Because they have other people, other friends, other contacts, and other people that mean something to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a good opportunity for them as well mm-hmm. to just be a more well-rounded person. And
one of the hardest things for individuals, and I'll speak for them, and I don't really, I'm just saying, for most individuals, I think it's very hard to create relationships because yeah. they've been given up on so many times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they've had trauma. They've had a lot of things, and they've had a lot of people exit their lives to never be seen again. Mm-hmm. So when they see us, it's a connection. It's yeah. like that person, even though I don't live with them or they don't do relief for me anymore, sees me, lights up, mm-hmm. hugs me. I mean, there's a male, I don't want to say his name, but I'll kiss him on the cheek and say, I love you. You know, yeah. because he really was a part of our lives for years. Mm-hmm. And it's just that. It's just being relational. So it's not just about going and meeting other relief homes. It's going and meeting these other individuals. Yeah. So you can kind of get a feel for what their expectations are and mm-hmm. what they like to do and get yeah. to know them. So yeah. if they do come to your home, you're ready and you're prepared.
Yeah.
You've talked yeah. to this person and you've spoken to them mm-hmm. and you have to be careful because some of them will manipulate to kind of get some things that they want
yeah.
that you probably shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And that's
and they're
why
not getting at their current home yeah, or something
exactly.
like that.
And that's yeah. why it's important to talk to the home,
yes.
build a relationship with them.
Yeah.
So you know exactly what mm-hmm. to expect. And yeah. When that individual comes to your home, if you do relief for them, then you're well prepared to
yeah.
provide for them.
Yeah.
So getting out there, getting your face known. If you're not doing those things, that's why you don't have a client.
Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yeah, it really is.
Huge. Yeah. That kind of leads into another question I wanted to ask you was whenever you, which it's been a while since you've got a new client, mm-hmm. obviously over 3 years.
Yeah.
What was that like that first day? Like, how did you prepare mentally your home with Emily? Like, what were the things that you guys did to get ready for that
so
new client?
Restoring
and
Hope
preparing
specific?
Your home as well. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So Restoring Hope specific, being again that we had all this experience, it wasn't fairly new to us, but I'm going to put myself into a new position
okay.
and say, so this is what we did, even though we had a lot of experience. So Derek right. was our first client. Mm-hmm. that we got in our home. Derek was in a residential facility mm-hmm. in Bolivar. So we, Emily, I was working outside of the home. So Emily took our three adopted children and our daughter mm-hmm. to that residential facility. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you communicate with the residential facility. You communicate with the people that know the individual just to make yeah. sure that there's not going to be any issues. You don't want right. to put yourself in a position to have...
Or your children.
Yeah, or your yeah. children to be harmed or anything. So... Mm-hmm. You communicate, you do this, you do that. And then she took the kids out there, met Derek. Derek has never been violent. But they had a conversation. They ate lunch. They played a game. Derek loves board games.
Yeah.
So, and then left. And then we chatted about it. And she said, you know, this is him. This is it. They went one more time and met with him. And then we went and met as a family with him. And I think we took him out to eat. And we went somewhere. Did something again. This is 8 years ago. So yeah.
I don't even remember. It's been a hot minute.
Yeah. I don't remember yesterday, but, to prepare for, if you're coming into this new and you don't have the experience, the number one thing is getting to know exactly what you're getting yourself into with the individual and the client,
okay.
getting a small portion or a large portion, whatever you want to hear of their background. Mm-hmm. You want to know some of the issues that they may have had and yeah. some of the issues that may be still continuing, because that's right. really important, especially right. if you have kids, because yeah. you don't want to invite somebody into your home that could harm your children, obviously, right. or harm yourself. Mm-hmm. So getting as much information as possible, face-to-face with that person. It's important to obviously know the parameters of your home, too. If it's somebody who has mobility issues, you don't want a two-story home.
Right.
So preparing your home and making sure that this individual is the right fit or as right as you're going to get at that moment, if you're fairly new, I would mm-hmm. say the biggest thing is getting to know them, meeting them where they're at, and then making sure that you're familiar with medications, you're familiar with what times they're doing the medications, mm-hmm. And preparing your home. I don't know if there's really anything other than just trying to provide a welcoming environment. You know, you don't have to do like a huge celebration. And sometimes some of these individuals are embarrassed by a huge celebration and posting like welcome and this and that, but making them feel welcome, feel a part of the family mm-hmm. because that's what the Restoring Hope host home model is. Man, that's tough to say. That's what this model is. It's for family. It's a family environment.
Right.
So
belonging.
Yes. Yeah. So I think one of the most important things to prepare your home and yourself is meeting them where they're at first and kind of getting a feel for that, seeing what they like to do.
Yeah.
Taking them into the community is really big because you want to expose them to things that you're going to eventually expose them to. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to go to Walmart or if you want to go shopping and if they have a hard time with those things, you want to know how they're going to react in those environments.
If that's your kind of your pace of your family, they kind of need to be.
They've
got to
be doing what you're doing too,
with you
because you're not shutting yourself down. You can't shut yourself down. You can't say, "Well, he can't go to Walmart because he acts up." Then how are you ever going to go to a store?
Yeah.
If that doesn't fit for you, that doesn't fit for you.
Right.
Then if it does fit for you, how are you going to adjust that? How are you going to make that adjustment? Mm-hmm. Because that's not a big deal. Like a 3-year old, you take a 3-year old. They see a candy bar. Oh, you're done.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
You're done. Either give in or you carry them out crying.
Uh-huh.
And that's not what you do with individuals, but there's things that, you know, there's things that can pop up. So you need to be well aware of that. So get all the information that you can. Uh-huh. Talk about it with your spouse. That's another big thing too, is preparing. Having a will and won't list is really important.
Yeah, and this is so good.
This goes right back to when my wife and I were doing foster care, we had a list, and I believe they gave us a checklist of what are you willing to accept and what are you not willing to accept. And that's super, super important because you have to be able to have boundaries. Mm-hmm. And if there's somebody, unfortunately, there's individuals who have been sexually abused. They've been physically abused.
Absolutely.
They have PTSD, trauma, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many things that you're going to come across. Mm-hmm. And if you read a bio that says that there was some sexual abuse and there's some current sexual acting out, and that's on your won't list, it's on your won't list.
Right.
You do not cross that over to your will list.
Yeah.
You set boundaries on that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And unfortunately, I would really like to have a client because I really want to get this going and I really want to be a host home. That's really my desire, or a relief home, whatever. But I can't do this. I can't.
Not equipped.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Or you have kids in the home. That's just not something you're.
And it doesn't always have to be sexual. It can be just anything. If it's on your won't list, it needs to stay on your won't list. Mm-hmm. Don't cross that over to your will list because you're desperate. Don't do that.
Yeah.
That is a really, really bad mistake because not only are you potentially causing harm to yourself and your family, but you're also possibly exposing them to re-victimize.
Right.
So, and then that not only causes issues with your family, but it also causes issues with the individual.
Right. It's a disruption to them. If they're having to move, they feel rejected each time.
And guess what happens if something else happens like that?
Yeah.
They're going to go back to a residential facility where they appear, well, it looks like they've been given up on once again.
Yep.
And because of that, they're probably going to be in that residential facility even longer.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things to consider. And this is why it's important to connect with other host homes so you can share and have hour-long conversations that we can't have today. We're not going to be here till, you know, 6 p.m. tonight just talking about all this stuff. So,
I think that's so key how you hit on that, like with the client's interest, what you accept, what works for your family. So if you're more of like a sedimentary person, you may want a client that likes to just chill at home.
Gamers.
That may be more of your vibe, more of your style. But if if you're a family that likes to travel, that likes to be in the community, making sure you can find clients mm-hmm. that adapt and,
yeah.
you know, would be willing to, you know, have that kind of lifestyle or could thrive in that kind of lifestyle.
I'm glad you mentioned travel too.
Yeah.
Because we do a trip every year
yeah.
with our individuals. And we do that because, again, this model is a family environment model.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just you're not just a caregiver. You're a mom right. and a dad.
Yeah.
So, and that's how, that's why it's so important to us too. And that's why we absolutely love Restoring Hope. It's just, it was fascinating to see the approach, but I'll get into that in a little bit. But, when you talk about traveling, we take our individuals to, we took all of our individuals and our daughter to Disney World, mm-hmm. In October. And then we're doing another trip in to Texas in July, and we do a lot of walking. We do a mm-hmm. lot of we'll go to a Roaring River during the summer, find a spring, find a river, find something that you can cool down on, have yeah. fun in, let them kind of be themselves, mm-hmm. and splash and do whatever. But like you said, if you're into the chill lifestyle, that's totally you, then that's you.
Yeah.
And you need to find individuals that fall into that.
Mm-hmm.
Derek loves to play video games. He can spend majority of the day playing video games.
Yeah.
But if you said, Derek, let's do a walk, Derek, let's play a board game, Derek, let's do this, he jumps up and he'll be on that in a minute.
Yeah.
But his preference is to be out doing things. He also comes to us and says, can we go walk the dogs? Can we go on a hike? Can we do this? Can we do that? So yeah, finding those individuals and knowing their interest and what exactly they want to do.
Yeah.
Because if your lifestyle, as we get older, this is what we plan to do the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't
see you retiring.
We're not retiring.
Yeah.
We're not. We're just yeah. doing this the rest of our lives. We're
yeah.
going to be caregivers, which when I think about it, sometimes I'm like, man, that's a lot of years left.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Got a long time to go.
Yeah.
But at this moment, we're not sedentary, and we want to be out. We want to be doing things.
Yeah.
But eventually, it may change to where mm-hmm. we're just not able physically to
yeah.
to keep up with the individuals that we have.
Right.
So we'll have to slow down a bit, which if we slow down a bit, I don't think our individuals would really mind. I think mm-hmm. they enjoy being at home, but they also enjoy being out and doing things.
Yeah.
So it is important to know, I guess, where your threshold is, mm-hmm. so to say, and yeah. exactly what motivates you and what gets you going. And if it is that sedentary lifestyle, then find people that are okay with that, because
right.
that can be a trigger for some individuals. Yeah. Like, why aren't we ever doing anything? I don't want to sit at home all day. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And then they could be loud. They can be obnoxious and whatever, because
right.
they just need attention, or they need to be outside and getting that energy out.
Yes. Yeah.
So we all need to get that energy out.
Mm-hmm. So. Definitely. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your foster care journey. Mm-hmm. You and Emily's, like, how did you decide to start doing that? And what has that been like
okay.
for you guys?
So Emily and I got, we met in 07. We got married in 09. So when we met, we instantly connected. And one of the things that kind of was a big draw for us was children. I had two children, two biological boys, and she was a nanny. So children was a really big thing for us. And she just jumped right into the family and was just, she still is amazing. So when we got married, we drove from Springfield to New Orleans for our honeymoon. And all the way there, I think 8-9 hours, I don't remember whatever mm-hmm. it was, all the way there, all the way back, we talked about foster care.
Yeah.
That was both of us, it was on our hearts. It wasn't one of us trying to influence the other. Like, is
yeah.
this what you want to do? It's like,
yeah.
no, we were fired up, like lit. So came home. We got married in May. And then June, we were doing foster parenting classes through Missouri Baptist Children's Home. We did our classes. And it was so cool, too, because it was, I want to say it was a Wednesday we did the classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Houlihan's on the north side, and they had like a half price appetizer or something like that. So we sat down and we just had appetizers and shared and talked, and we started creating our will and won't list and started doing all those things. We just kind of went back and forth.
Is that part of the foster care model? Is that just something you guys come up with?
The will and won't list?
Yeah.
If I remember right, they give you a sheet of paper for you to checkmark. Okay. They did at that time, like checkmark some things that you are not willing to accept and some things you are. Mm-hmm. And I just call it a will and won't list because I don't think Restoring Hope does that.
Yeah.
And that's something to consider if you don't have that experience.
Absolutely.
Like, trust me, you're going to want to come up with, something.
I think that's wonderful advice.
Yeah. So we would sit down, we talked about things. We talked about what we learned in class and going back and forth. In December, I believe, we got licensed. And I'll say also that most agencies want you to be married for a year to make sure that you're going to continue to be married.
Stability is very important.
Yeah. And we were married, I think it's 9 months, 10 months at that point, 9 months. Yeah. And they bypassed that because they knew, they felt that energy that we had. They felt the excitement. They felt everything and they felt that we were well connected. So then we got our placement, our first placement in February. That was a young lady. And this was traditional care. And then it was, my time frames are terrible. Like Emily can just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, she's so, got it.
Yeah. And then we got Elijah, who's one of our adopted children. We got him when he was six or seven. And he'll be 21 in October now. And we are his legal guardians. So that's something else to consider too. Yeah. I know Restoring Hope doesn't allow that legal guardianship portion, but if you were into that, foster care, if you adopt, you may end up adopting for life, so to speak. Right. I mean, it's obviously you're adopting for life, but you may be that caregiver for the remainder of the individual's life and your life. So that's something to consider. But so then we did foster care with Elijah. He had a lot of behavioral issues, so we increased to, I believe they called it behavioral at that time. I don't know if they changed the name, but it's just a highest level therapeutic is what it is or was. So therapeutic, where therapeutic recommends that you have one individual stay home, one parent stay home.
Okay.
They have to stay home for you to be therapeutic.
Gotcha.
That way you're there 24/7 if they need call picked up from school, et cetera, et cetera. So, so we adopted Elijah, got Drew and Alex. They are, Drew will be 20 in July and Alex will be 19 in June. They're both out of the home.
Yeah.
So we adopted, and then they were unable to, function in school. So we did homeschooling. I mean, Emily.
Yeah.
So Emily has
she took on the brunt of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was working outside of the home and she was working. She has an elementary ed degree.
Okay.
So she did all the homeschooling. She's done her own curriculum. She did some other different things, but she's been always just been so amazing.
Yeah. You
know, getting them out, doing the community resources. That's another way that we got connected with community resources.
Okay.
Very early on. So doing those things. So throughout that process, there was a lot of hardship, so much hardship. There's so many things that come up that even though you were kind of aware of them, they come up in very odd ways. And they come up in very strong ways. And they come up in very aggressive ways. Okay. So we dealt with a lot. Like we really did. We dealt with a lot. And I don't want to get into everything.
Yeah.
Our experience was what helped us to be where we are today with individuals and not to, to panic and not to freak out and not to get worked up, because that's one of the worst things you can do is when an individual goes up that you go up with them. You need to remain where you're at and stay calm. And we've learned to do that over the years. How? I don't know. Because with everything that we've dealt with. But our journey has led us to three wonderful, wonderful children.
Yeah.
And so many other connections, because it wasn't just we adopted and we were done. Mm-hmm. We did foster care for, I think Emily and I sat down and talked about it. And I think we've had over the years, we've had 24 or 25 individuals in our home over the years, which doesn't hold a candle to some of the other homes that we know.
Yeah, but that's still a block.
But it is.
Yeah,
it
that's is. A lot of lives you guys have likely
impacted somehow. Yeah. Somehow, mm-hmm. hopefully in a good way.
I would say positively. My guess would be positively. Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say is the big difference between foster care and Restoring Hope, whether that's experience, the resources, the support? What would you say?
The first word out of my mouth is support.
Yeah.
And that's immediately, that was my first thought of support.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell everybody is support. There is differences in many ways. And it's not to look down on the licensee agencies through right. Green County and Restoring
yeah.
Hope.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of differences. Mm-hmm. Support is number one. We didn't feel supported during our process and therapeutic foster care, even through MBCH, which I really like MBCH. We just didn't, they would come out once a month. We didn't get a lot of advice. We didn't get a lot of information when we were having issues.
Yeah.
It just seemed like they were like, I can try to help you figure this out, but I need you to figure it out and then let me know how you figured it out.
Oh, okay.
So that isn't the best solution.
No.
And they would come out just like most agencies, and Restoring Hope is the same way. Like, you come out once a month, you meet, you talk, you do I don't remember what they would call it, just a team meeting or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we just, number one is just support. We didn't feel supported throughout the process. And, you know, honestly, we do this, we stay at home. Both of us stay at home. We don't work outside of the home. So the financial mm-hmm. portion is big too, because there's a big difference between the financial portion too, which is a blessing.
Yeah.
And I'm not highlighting that like, ooh, you're going to be making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Trust me. It's like I said, if you're doing it for the financial portion, please find something else to do.
Yeah.
Because there's many other things you can be doing and making money. And so, but the financial portion is different, and it's been a blessing for us. It really has. The support is different in the way, like I mentioned, we had the caseworkers come out, and it seemed like we were trying to problem solve. And like I said, they were wanting to know how we problem solve so they can get some resources, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And Restoring Hope, I can contact any of our program managers at any time. If they don't have an answer, they're going to find one. Mm-hmm. They're going to go to another program manager, go to another host home, mm-hmm. do this, do that. And they are doing the work that they are employed to do.
Right.
And I didn't feel like throughout the foster care process, I didn't feel like that was happening. Mm-hmm. And we felt very isolated. And like I said, if you remember, like I said earlier, like, you don't want to feel isolated in this.
Right.
This is the last job you want to feel isolated in.
Oh, yeah.
Because once you hit that, that's when you have doubt. That's when you have a lot of other things set in, which can turn into mental and emotional concerns in the future for yourself. So it's, you know, you need to be able to take care of yourself. So the support has been absolutely amazing. Derek was placed by Stacy Owen, who is the, is she chief financial?
CEO.
So CEO. Yeah. She, and so as I had mentioned to you earlier, I can, at any time, I can send her an email. And as long as it's not something that needs to be addressed by a program manager, she'll respond, and just, well, we can just go back and forth. And Emily's the same way. We can just, at any time, every time we see her, hey, Stacy, we just have a conversation with her.
Mm-hmm.
So she placed Derek, and that was, you know, one of those things that from that point until today, over all these years, I can go to Stacy if I needed to and just ask her questions or whatever, and she'll fire something back to me. And that's how it's been with all the program managers.
Yeah.
Again, we've had numerous program managers throughout, but Jamie Nunez at one time was our program manager, and I don't remember, I don't know what her actual title is right now.
She's a program director.
Yes,
now.
Thank
over
you.
The Springfield area.
There you go. So I don't know all the titles and everything.
Yeah.
But she was our program manager at one time. If I wanted to have a conversation with Jamie about something, I can have that conversation with
her.
Kyle Collins, who is one of my best friends.
Yeah.
But he's also was our program manager.
Yeah.
And now he is
a senior.
Thank you.
Program manager. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Everyone's just kind of shifted up.
Exactly.
Not out.
And these are my friends. That's why I don't know their titles, because I know their names, and they're my, they're our friends.
They're just, relationships.
I have no idea. I seriously don't know what their titles are.
Yeah.
I don't. I know Kyle was a something program.
Yeah.
So anyway, but Kyle and I worked at the juvenile office together. And then I came home to do Restoring Hope.
Yeah.
And eventually he quit the juvenile office and he became our program manager. So that was just such a, it was a really cool moment, and I'm getting sidetracked again, but it's that support that I don't know their titles. I just know them because I know that
they're your people. Yeah.
They are. And they aren't just my friends. They're people that I can go to, that I can have real conversations with. Yeah. And these are employees of Restoring Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to give me real answers. And if they don't have those real answers, like I said, they're going to go and find those answers.
Yeah.
If they don't have those answers, they're going to say, let's find the answer together.
Right.
And that's really, really important.
Yeah.
When you're doing this, it's so important to have that support. It's so important to have answers when you need them. And if you don't have it immediately, I can almost guarantee you're going to get a response within a day.
Yeah.
So if it's not from a program manager, it's probably going to be from a host home or a relief home or somebody who has that experience. So support is one of the big things. The model, like I've mentioned numerous times, the model is really important too, because Restoring Hope didn't provide our home and say, we're going to put you in a home that we paid for, that we rent out, whatever, and we need you to take care of it. We need to do this. And we're going to put these individuals there with you, and it's going to be some weird experiment. This is our home.
Yeah.
Emily and I purchased this home, and we're inviting individuals into our home, and the model is family. Mm-hmm. It's, we want to promote family. Yeah. We don't want to have the foster care. We don't want to do, we don't want to have a label for it. Yeah. We're putting individuals into a host home. That's the big difference. It's a home. And from day one, it's always felt like that. They're in our home and they're our children. Mm-hmm. Like, I still refer to Derek, Christian, and Austin as our children.
Yeah.
And they call, Derek doesn't call me dad. I smile because I just can't picture him. He would laugh too if he called me dad.
Yeah.
But Austin calls us dad and mom.
Yeah.
Kristen calls us Kevin and Emily, and Derek does, I don't, he just says, hey, you, or you know what I mean? Sometimes anyway, so, you can tell hopefully that we have a great relationship with Derek and all of them, but you know, Derek's been with us for so long that he is our child legitimately.
Yeah.
And you know, we've been through experiences with him. He's lost his mom and his dad. And you know, we've been through that with him. And he has us as mom and dad. So I think this made it a lot easier for him to hopefully he would, I don't think he would ever express, you know, true feelings.
It's probably in here.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah. And that's why it's so important for him to have a mom and a dad that he can still relate to. And he can, he's bought us presents before that just blow my mind.
Yeah.
So, and I say all that to say, this is a home for them. This isn't just a facility.
Right.
It's not a foster home.
Yeah.
This is where they come home. This is where they sleep. This is where they can go and play their video games. This is where they can do this. This is where they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so awesome for each individual to have their own home, which is required, or excuse me, their own room, which is required.
Yeah.
Because they need that.
Yep.
I want my own room, don't you?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah.
We want all of our kids to have their own room.
Yeah.
And it's where you can be yourself. It's where you can trash the room if you want.
Yeah.
Where you can, you know, have the books and the games and whatever. It's your room, your space, and it's your home. So we have a big backyard. We have, there's other things throughout the home that we have that, that they can take advantage of. Mm-hmm. So, but I think those are the big things with Restoring Hope that has been the biggest difference to me. But again, let me highlight one more time the support, because that is so, so important.
Yeah. I am curious, like, what your takeaway is on having, like, male role models, since all of your clients are all males. Do you find that that is helpful, impactful to have a male role model in their lives, in the home, whether that's you or a program manager? What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. And it's another great reminder of this host home model is they need a male father.
Mm-hmm.
They need a male role model. They need to see how somebody, they need to see me, the male, doing dishes, doing laundry, cleaning, driving around to appointments, doing the grocery shopping. I do all of that. And Emily does a lot of, we have our granddaughter also. So she, we have her 40 to 45 hours a week. So she does a lot of that caregiving.
Right.
So they're seeing mom and dad taking care of all these responsibilities.
Yeah, working
and it's
together.
Not just males out, you know, doing this and doing that. And, you know, I don't know what the stereotype is for the male, but I would say the stereotype would be that most males aren't doing the dishes, aren't doing laundry. And I know that they do. I do. Yeah. Trust me. I know that they do.
Yeah.
But it's good to for them to see those things,
mm-hmm.
for them to see the father taking care of all that stuff. I cook dinner every single night. To be doing cooking and doing cleaning and doing all those things. And then seeing how I respond to certain situations,
mm-hmm.
which isn't always the best. I mean,
yeah, you know,
sometimes
we're human,
yeah,
right?
We are. Yeah. So, but seeing how I respond to anything and then how I respond to how I responded, is very important because they need to see a male in action, so to speak, how the male, but they also need to see that because we're driven by the testosterone and the moms are typically driven by the love and the support and the care and empathy and sympathy and a lot of those things too.
Yeah.
So that's why that host home model is very important to have the mother and the
both
father.
Both sides of the coin.
The both sides. But they are. It is really important to see the males doing a lot of those things. Also to be out doing things as men, camping and hiking. We've taken all of them on camping trips. We take them on hiking trips. We do swimming, we do all kinds of different things. But also, you know, going to places where you can get some of that energy out, the you know, and be a man or be a male, whatever, so to speak. And then, you know, like I mentioned, we do Taekwondo, so we're getting aggression out. There's so many different things you can do to be males, so to speak. But we like to do camping. We haven't done camping for a while, but we do camping trips like that and just kind of getting out and doing those things and sharing experiences together. So it's really important for them to have that because I can guarantee you they've had males at some point in their life that impacted them.
Right.
That could have been their biological fathers.
Yeah.
It could have been uncles. It could have been whatever. And they may still have those individuals in their life too. But if they're not getting it every single day, then that's probably something that's going to fall off. It's it's a communication. It's a relationship too.
So you modeling that in front of them.
Try my best.
Is, what's going to show them though, because you can say these things. This is how you need to act. This is how you need to behave all day long.
Yeah.
But you modeling it in front of them is what's going to sink in.
There's times that, you know, like individuals that are 27 years old, if they're acting well below that, and I'm talking like 12-year-old, if they're doing some 12-year-old behaviors, call them out on that. Like, you know, that's shouldn't be doing those types of things. And, in the home or in the public or whatever, and modeling that too, you know, like here's an appropriate time to do that. Like go in the backyard and do whatever and be silly and goof off and be loud or whatever. Or, you know, those are appropriate times to do those things. Or if you want to go into the basement, we have a heavy bag down there, punch a heavy bag or do whatever, you know, like get some of those things out or whatever. But it's also like calling them out and saying, you know, like, modeling it too. Like I'm not doing those things because I want to be known as a responsible adult and getting them into that mindset because that's something that most of these individuals aren't in that mindset of like being responsible because they're traumatized. They have things from the past that get brought up and they want to act a certain way and it comes out in just kind of odd ways sometimes. So being able to model that, like you said.
So as far as the support system goes within your house, say you're having a difficult time or say Emily's having a difficult time. How do you guys work together and help each other through those situations?
Typically we just, we make sure we're on the same page when it comes to any issues that may come up or anything that needs to be addressed. We always talk about those things and we decide who's going to talk. And it's mainly Emily. Emily's so much better at talking about these things because again, with myself, I may jump into just an angry or frustrated because, you know, again, we've been doing this for so long that some of these things still kind of frustrate me. So she's so much better about having those conversations and the way that she approaches it. And there's times that I have those conversations because it's something that needs to be said from a male point of view. So we always talk about those things, say, this is how we want to address this. And I typically, well, I'll go ahead and let you address that because I don't know if I can address that in a nicer way. So
in a way that will be well received.
Yes, that's that's very important.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
So we typically will talk about those things, like I said, and it's there's things. So when you first experience those things, it's like, ooh, wow, how are we going to address this? And then it's really like more in-depth conversations. Those conversations can go on for hours and days before something, you want to address it immediately.
Yeah.
So you think about the best way to address that. You talk about that. And the best thing you can do is stay connected with that individual and what can potentially, so this has happened before, so this could potentially happen again. We tried this and it didn't work out. So maybe next time we need to, because you're not just going to have one solution. Mm-hmm. You're always, almost always going to have two or three possible ways that you can address this. And then you're going to say, well, one will work this way, two will work this way, three will work this way. So let's try the number one first. Mm-hmm. And then if that doesn't work, then we can try the backup solution, whatever. So you're always trying to come up with solutions. The more you talk about those things, mm-hmm. the more you will come up with more solutions. But it's also kind of knowing how that individual is going to react to what you say or do, because that's really important too. Because if you aren't careful, you are setting yourself up for failure and you're setting them up for failure too, because they're not going to learn anything from that. So again, being connected with each other and being connected with that individual and knowing how they're going to respond to what you say and who is going to say it. That's important too.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it needs to come from a male point of view and sometimes it needs to come from a female point of view. Yeah. But I will say in our home, majority of it is Emily.
Yeah.
Because she just addresses it in a sensitive way or however it needs to be.
Right, yeah. So in closing, mm-hmm. what would be your advice just for someone who's new coming in, curious about this, what it's like, not sure if they want to do it, what would you say to them?
So number one, if they don't have any experience with the foster care system or in experience with individuals with special needs or emotional needs, mental health needs, whatever. If you don't have any experience with that and somebody has been talking to you about that, the number one thing I would say is be connected to why, your why. Mm-hmm. Why is it that you want to do this? Is there somebody that's telling you that they think it would be a great thing for you to do? Are they doing it because you're unemployed and you're looking for something, an employment? So the biggest thing for Emily and I was our faith. We really felt like this is why we were put on this earth. Mm-hmm. And I've never felt more grounded to that than, and Emily's the same way. We just feel like we're very grounded in that.
Yeah.
And that's why we're continuing to do this after all these years too. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be you're grounded in that because of your faith, but why do you want to do this? So if you're doing it for that financial portion, then if that's a small portion of that, fantastic, because it shouldn't be the number one reason.
So
the biggest thing is have that conversation. If it's you and your husband are wanting to do it, the two of you need to sit down, have that conversation about why you're doing this and how you're going to provide for an individual. If you have children or you don't have children, whatever your situation is, sit down, start having that conversation. Do you feel led to do this? Mm. And again, that doesn't have to be a faith-based thing.
Yeah.
Do you feel led? Are you motivated? Are you excited? Or is somebody telling you about this and they think you will be good at it because maybe you've worked with individuals with special needs or whatever. Mm-hmm. I worked at Burrell Behavioral Health. I worked at the juvenile office. So I have a lot of experience with individuals with special needs and mental health needs. So this is just, it just fits. It fit well for us.
It's natural.
Yeah, it is natural. So if that's not something that fits well for you, then you need to figure out your why. So I would have that conversation, come up with your list. Like I said, your wills and your won'ts. What are you willing to do and what are you willing to not do? And then once you get into, if you decide, hey, we're going to move forward with this, don't allow the frustration that you're going to experience, because you will experience frustration.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while for you to get a placement. It's not going to a placement. It's going to take a while for you to get an individual. Is in that time frame, is your home ready? Do you have all the things that Restoring Hope requires? Do you have all your smoke detectors and your fire alarms and this and that? Do you have them on all your levels and all those things? So I know Restoring Hope is going to come in and do their checks and do this and that.
Yeah.
But what else can you be doing that looks inviting to an individual? Mm-hmm. The room that they're going to be in, It says, does it just have a bed and a dresser? Or, I mean, what else can you do to say welcome home? Mm-hmm. What else can you say, you know, we're glad you're here without having to say I'm glad you're here? Mm-hmm. Do you have, I don't know if it's a younger, do you have play sets? Do you have a backyard that they can benefit from? Looking around your home just in general about looking at it from their point of view. They're coming into your home and you're strangers and they're a stranger to you also.
Yeah.
But making sure that your home's prepared, making sure that you're prepared, you know, talking to Restoring Hope, program managers, connecting with other, just get yourself involved with Restoring Hope. If this is truly what you're going to do, then that's not going to be a problem for you, because Restoring Hope's probably going to flood you with, individuals, or flood you with homes, or flood you with information. And as long as you're taking that information in, you're going to get frustrated, but don't let that frustration be the reason that you stop doing this, because that's not fair to you, who can potentially be a great relief or host home. And it's not fair to individuals. It's also not fair to other host homes and relief homes that can benefit from any experience that you may have.
Yeah.
So allow, don't get frustrated. Don't allow that frustration to be the reason you quit. And just continue to push forward, because you're going to have some hiccups. You're going to have some, it's a job. So you're going to experience some, those job issues that you have. You're going to experience frustrations, but like I said, attend all your events that you can, connect with other host homes, start asking for phone numbers, not just for relief, just start asking for phone numbers to connect with other people, connect with your program managers, connect with anybody that you can within Restoring Hope that you can get information from. Because the more you're actively out there, the easier it is for you to get relief. And I would recommend doing as much relief as you possibly can. Hit up numerous homes. Don't just find one relief and then say, well, this is all I'm going to do at this point, and then I'll get a client pretty quick. So I'm just going to do relief for this guy 1 month out of the, one weekend out of the month. So go to other host homes or relief homes and check with other homes and see about getting other individuals in your home. Get a nice experience, because that one individual that you're getting, you're missing out on so many other individuals that are so awesome and so unique and have so many stories to tell. And you never know. One of the things that Emily and I that has happened over the years is we got to know a lot of the host homes and relief homes. And a lot of our clients have come from host homes that were getting to a point where they were either elderly or they were unable to care for that individual because of any issues. So guess who was there without a second or third placement? That was us. Yeah. And the reason that we were the first, or I think we were the first, because we were so connected to that family. Yeah. We had been doing relief for so long and we were doing relief for so many other families.
So it's a good way to absorb clients that need to move.
It is. And it's, you know, and it's not poaching. We were just, they said, we're just at a point where we can no longer. And they said, I got a great home. Let me contact them. So I can tell you that we've had four of the individuals that we've had in the past 4 or 5 years, we've had six individuals in our home. And I can tell you that four of those individuals, six or seven, then four of those individuals have come from homes that said, I'm no longer able to care for them. And they, and these kids have been with them for so long, been at that home for so long.
Yeah.
And the first thing that Restoring Hope did, I said, we've got the home for you. And that was us because they knew so we had the experience, and when they knew that we were reaching out, they knew that we were doing all the relief, they knew all this stuff, and they knew that we were a good home. So, and that's how that happens too, is the more that you're providing for individuals, the more you're out there and the more your name's out there and you're showing that you're doing the work, so to speak, that's how you're going to get that client. That's how you're going to get those clients, because one goes from two and two goes to three. And it does. It really does go that quick. Once you get one and you're showing that you're doing consistently the things that Restoring Hope needs you to do consistently for that individual, then the next thing you know, you've got two or three clients. And then you're probably settled where you need to be. Yeah. So the number one thing is, like I said, and I think I've said that throughout this conversation, It's just make sure that you're staying connected with other people and getting out there and getting your name out there, and not with just the host home and relief homes, but also with the clients too.
Yeah. I love it. Such good stuff. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if you have anything else on your heart or anything you want to share.
Not really. I think we've covered a lot of the things, and I know there's some things, and I'll be driving home and I'll be like, oh man, I should have, but that's always going to come up. But
I guess one last thing I would like to know is, what's been the most rewarding piece of being a Restore and Hope caregiver for you?
Wow. Oh, experiences. Not only for us, the experiences of taking these individuals, taking my kids to Disney World for the first time. And that's the first time I've been to Disney World. So we're having this experience together.
Yeah.
And when we go to, we're planning on going to Port Aransas in July. So taking these, taking our kids to the beach, mm-hmm. I think for our three individuals, our daughter's been to the beach before, but for Derek, Austin, and Christian, Christian may have been to the beach before. I think he has, but Derek and Austin have never been to the beach. Okay. So doing that is probably one of the most rewarding things for us. And we don't take pride in that. We're not like, oh, we're the first ones to take them to the beach. Look out, you know, it's sharing those experiences together. And it's the most rewarding thing is just knowing that you're doing what you feel like you were called to do. For me, is one of the most rewarding things, is saying my purpose here is to live a life that honors other people and honors my faith is really important. But I also love the fact that we're just doing things with them. Derek's never done Taekwondo, you know, so now he's doing Taekwondo and just anything. It'd be pickleball. They never played pickleball before. They're doing pickleball. They're doing, Derek does champion athletes. Just those experiences is something that we take for granted, obviously. Obviously, and honestly. But just don't take those things for granted, because these experiences that they're getting, if they were still where they were left at in residential facilities, they're not going to get these experiences. Oh,
definitely
so
not.
These little things, don't take them for granted. Let them be rewarding to them and rewarding to you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be prideful and boastful about it. But knowing that they are getting these experiences because Restoring Hope and you have created that family environment that allows them to have these rewarding experiences. And it can be anything. I think that's the most rewarding thing, I would say, probably for both of us, is just knowing that we're providing those experiences that they wouldn't have had probably ever. And you're talking about adults. You're talking about 27-year-olds who have never been to the beach before.
Right.
And we're doing that with them because we want to do that as a family. Mm-hmm. So,
And with you having three clients and you being able to quit your
full-time job,
9-to-5 job, whatever, I'm sure that wasn't your hours.
Yeah.
But you doing that, or having the three clients, has opened that up, provided your family more flexibility, time to take vacations where everybody gets to go, everyone's involved. Mm-hmm. So,
And it's, we're technically, we have three jobs because each client is considered a job, so to speak. And so
they each have their own set of books and documentation and all of that that has to be done.
Yeah, that's another thing.
In order
too.
To stay in compliance, which is another probably, we talk about people and paper in this organization, like in our leadership programs that we have with our team. And, a lot of people are more people centered if you're in a service field. And so paperwork is like, we don't really want to do it. But it is also a necessary evil, in that in order to get the funding, we have to do the paperwork side. But and obviously,
I'm terrible with a lot of that paperwork. Like Emily has to be like, hey, they're coming on the 3rd or whatever day it is. And I'm like, so, and I come from mental health and juvenile office that requires documentation all the time.
Right.
And just because you're used to it doesn't mean you're ready for it.
Right.
So
it's not fun.
It always pops up and it's always like, ugh. Emily does all the meds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's also another thing too, is if you are like myself and you're talking about coming out of the field, so to speak, the 9-to-5 and to come home, remember that you are cutting off, potentially cutting off a social things for yourself too. So yeah. Where are you going to find those social aspects?
Oh, that's good.
Making sure you're getting out and doing those social things too.
Yeah.
Because I mean, believe it or not, work is a social thing.
Yeah.
You know, you see all these people, these individuals that you're never going to see again.
I've heard that statistic, like the people that you work with, I forget what the percentage is, but you're spending more time with them almost than you are like
your own family,
your unit, your family unit.
And that's exactly how it is too. And it was, I would say for the most part, mine was a 10 to 6, 9 to 5 type of thing. With Burl, it was kind of different sometimes later hours, but it really was. Once I cut that off, I cut off social because I had friends at juvenile office. Like, those are some of my best friends I still communicate to today, but I don't get to see them.
Right.
And that's just because I have 3 jobs.
Yeah.
And it keeps us pretty busy. So,
Awesome. Well, thank you so much
for
visiting. I loved hearing everything you had to share. And I know our listeners are going to really enjoy everything that you had to share and all the advice.
Yeah, such and good stuff. That's something, again, like if anybody's listening and they have any curiosity, please contact me. I don't know how to get my information out, but I know Restoring Hope has my information, obviously.
We can definitely
Please share that information because I would love to talk to anybody listening, anybody watching that wants more information. You don't have to just go to Restoring Hope. Please contact me.
I mean,
obviously you have to go through Restoring Hope to do the paperwork and do it, the legal stuff. But I'm more than happy. Gosh, I would love to communicate with anybody and just build a relationship with anybody that is wanting to know more information about my experience with Restoring Hope, our experience with Restoring
Hope. I love that. So. And you're coming at it from a very personal level. You're living it.
Yes.
Day in, day out, 24/7. And so you can answer those questions probably better than some of even our program management team could.
Exactly. And it's, you know, Restoring Hope pays us for having our individuals, but this is not a paid promotional thing. I didn't get any money for coming here.
Right.
This isn't, I'm just doing this from,
just love it.
From our heart. And I know you and I have had this conversation about doing this, and it's like wanting to do this, and it's wanting to get this information out there
because
it is so important because there are individuals that are waiting for homes, that need homes, that need great people in their lives, leave homes, host homes, whatever it is. They just need great individuals that they can share life with. So,
Well, Restoring Hope is very blessed to have you and Emily.
And we feel the same exact way. We feel so blessed to be with Restoring Hope.
So, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.